If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss. There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the Pet Pod. This is the podcast that's all about pets. I'm Zara Boland. I'm a vet, a consultant, and an all-round animal lover. And each episode, I'm going to be joined by one or two of my veterinary friends and colleagues from across the pet healthcare industry so that we can offer you handy tips and some expert advice to help keep your beloved family pet healthy and above all happy. Today's podcast is supported by YouMove, the UK's number one vet joint supplement brand for dogs. Clinically proven to work in just 6 weeks, YouMove is recommended for older dogs who are starting to slow down and show some signs of stiffness. Now, as many of you know, my own dog Rumba is already 9 years old, and like many other dog owners, I'm always on the lookout for ways to make life a little bit more comfortable for her as she gets older. And that's why she's been taking YouMove for a few months now. But YouMove also have a range of products available to help younger dogs, and indeed those canine athletes, to stay on top form. And you'll be pleased to know it's also available for cats, horses, and even us humans. Now, what I really love about the team at YouMove is that they're on a mission to make sure every dog, cat, and horse lives their most active life for life. That's why they're offering a 30% discount code to everyone who listens to the Pet Pod. Simply visit youmove.co.uk and enter the code PETPOD30 when you get to the checkout. Plus, you can also be in with the chance to win a year's supply of YouMove for your own dog, cat, or horse. Enter the draw at youmove.co.uk/pages/petpod, and the winner will be drawn at random and announced on the 13th of January. So good luck! So today we're talking about pet food and how it can actually vary according to how old our pets are and what life they're leading. And this is actually a subject that I'm personally really passionate about because diet and nutrition is an area that I've spent many years working in when it comes to our pets, helping some of the world's biggest and also some of the smallest and newest brands to research and develop foods that benefit the health and well-being of your pet. And much like we're aware with our own health, what we eat actually matters. It's exactly the same for our pets. We are what we eat. And so diet plays a major role in keeping our pets healthy, active, and well-nourished. And it can also affect everything from brain development, teeth and bone health, right through to how shiny their coat is. And actually, that shine and condition of their coat can indicate their underlying health to us too, in terms of malnourishment. But to make sure I'm answering questions that many pet owners are going to be thinking, I've actually roped in the help of my producer, Julie. And Julie's going to be quizzing me during this episode, so I'm going to be in the hot seat. Please be nice to me, Jules.
Hi, Zara.
Hello, Julie.
Okay, first off, explain to me a bit what we mean by life stage versus lifestyle.
It's actually really, really simple. Life stage is linked to the age of your pet. So broadly speaking, it's divided into growth, adult, and senior. And lifestyle is actually linked to the life that they lead. So in cats, for example, lifestyle diets might be linked to indoor living, neutered status, because all of this has a different impact on the metabolism on the body. And in dogs, it could be a working dog, it could be a dog that needs to lose weight, same for cats. So really, it's lifestyle gets a little bit more complex, but it's linked to how your dog or your cat lives their life.
So you need to be taking both these factors into consideration, though, when you're looking at what's the best type of food to give your animal.
Absolutely. The pet food companies, most of them have actually put an awful lot of research into this area. And so there's a wealth of evidence that backs up the reasoning behind why we need to feed our puppies and kittens differently to how we feed our adult cats, differently again to how we feed our senior pets. And when it comes to lifestyle, there's a multitude of science that's been done, research to back up different nutrients that might benefit specific elements of a pet's lifestyle.
So I think probably as a pet owner, it can be quite confusing though, even maybe we could talk a little bit first of all about sort of when you've got a puppy or kitten, because it seems a bit more straightforward there to think, okay, well, they're young and they need something different, much like small humans need different types of foods.
All right. Well, puppies and kittens are growing, and they're growing really, really, really rapidly. And so if you compare a puppy to an adult dog, a growing puppy might require as much as 2 to 4 times more energy per kilogram of body weight than their adult version of themselves. And so that's because all this growth and energy requirement is going into building muscle, it's going into building bone, it's going into building teeth, it's going into building organs, it's going into building the brain. So every single nutrient you put into your puppy or your kitten as they grow, it's snatched up by the body and it's utilized. And so that's why we really need to tailor food to allow them to reach their optimal growth. And that's what puppy and kitten food does. So generally speaking, it's higher in protein, because protein is actually the building block to nearly every single cell in the body. And it's higher in good fats. And it's also higher in carbohydrates to allow for energy, because energy, carbohydrates are the quickest and easiest way to obtain energy. Pets don't need them. They actually do not have any requirement, essential requirement for carbohydrates. The reason why they're in most commercially formulated pet foods is actually to allow energy access and to allow for calories. So that kind of frees up the protein, if you like, to do its job of building muscle in puppies, as an example.
And then when you start to kind of wean your puppy or kitten onto more adult food, what age should that really be taking place?
In kittens, it's pretty straightforward. In kittens, we consider them to reach adulthood at around 12 months of age. In puppies, it's more complex because we have a huge variation in body size when we talk about dogs. So if you look at your toy, a mini kind of size dog, so let's say less than 5 kilos or less than 10 pounds if you're using the imperial system, then really we consider them to have reached maturity or adult weight by the time they're 9 months of age. If you look at small breed dogs or small size dogs, and that would be an adult weight of say 5 to 10 kilos or maybe coming up to just under 20 pounds in the imperial system, then they would generally be considered to reach maturity around 10 months of age. And then medium sized dogs, which is sort of 10 to 25 kilo adult body weight size or less than 50 pounds, we consider them to be sort of 12 months, they've reached maturity. But it gets much more complex when you look at large and giant breed size dogs like my dog, Rumba, who's a Bernese Mountain Dog, because they don't tend to reach maturity until they reach 18 to 24 months of age, depending on their full body weight as an adult.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so it's pretty complex in dogs. And actually, by the time a dog reaches full maturity, most of them are going to have increased their birth weight by 40 to 50 times. So there's a huge amount of growing to be done when they're little.
Wow, it's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, that's why puppy nutrition and kitten nutrition is so, so important, that we need to be able to provide them with the nutrients to allow and optimize this growth. We need to provide them with the right fats so that we can help brain and vision development. And one of those is a fatty acid called DHA. They also need to have, and this is super important for puppies, the right levels of calcium to phosphorus ratio to allow proper bone growth. And so I would urge anyone listening, please, please, please do not supplement any puppy food with or kitten food with calcium or phosphorus, because if you get that balance wrong, what will happen is it leads to bone deformities. And it's an awful thing as a vet to witness it. We think we're doing the right thing, but actually if you feed a properly formulated, complete and balanced puppy food or kitten food to your pet, it has the right proportion and ratio of calcium to phosphorus. Do not mess with that ratio, because it can have really serious consequences for your pet.
So that brings me on to something that is reading labels. We've sort of as humans started to get used to the idea of, well, some nice handy colour coding often going on the front of labels. But, you know, flip over to the back and try and see what all the ingredients are on something. And it can be quite confusing because, like you say, certain things can be called, you know, it might be easy if you just said, oh, it's calcium, but start using its proper scientific name and people don't always get what it means. But so when you say a complete food, what do you mean by a complete food? You know, what should we be looking at in terms of making sure our pets have got that?
Well, complete, if it's a complete food, it has to say that on the label. So in the UK, there are two different ways to label your food. It has to fall under either complete or complementary. Complementary generally means it's a treat. So it doesn't contain all the nutrients that your dog or your cat or your puppy or your kitten needs for healthy, optimal maintenance or growth, depending on their life stage. If it's called complete, then it's been formulated and appropriately researched to have the exact amount and balance of nutrients that are required for whatever age your pet is at and whatever lifestyle they're living. So it's really important if you have a dog or a cat and you're feeding them commercially prepared food, that you look for food that says complete and balanced on the front. If it says complementary, then it's not got all the nutrients that they require and you're going to need to supplement it. But the danger is you don't necessarily know what to supplement it with if it just says complementary. So in simple terms, a complementary food is generally considered to be a treat, and a complete food is what we consider to be a meal food.
And pet food should be labelled one or other of those when you look at it.
Absolutely. It has to be legally labelled as complete or complementary. There's no option. If it has neither on it, then it's not a legal pet food.
Important to know. So how do we go about you? I mean, there's so many brands. You go into any pet food shop or look online. Where do we begin? Because it's a bit of a minefield out there to decide on the right one.
Yeah, it can be, there's so much choice. In many ways, we're very lucky because there's a huge range of choice available for our pets that never existed before. And I think, you know, that actually goes hand in hand with the ongoing research that we're doing into pets. I mean, gosh, when I graduated from vet school, we hadn't even worked out the DNA of dogs. And now we not only know their DNA and the genome of dog makeup, but actually down to the molecular level of what protein and genetically coded to do what. So science has massively advanced in the last decade or two, and so it can be really dazzling when you get into the supermarket aisle or the pet specialty store. It can just be, you know, gosh, where do I start? I think let's stick with the basics. If you've got an adult dog or an adult cat, the first things first, you want to have complete and balanced pet food. If you're buying commercially prepared pet food, ideally it should have a high quality protein, because protein helps to maintain lean body mass or muscle, in other words. It is kind of a good source of energy, and it's important for repair of muscles and ongoing maintenance. So as I said earlier, protein is really one of the most fundamental nutrients we need, as well as our pets. The second thing is to make sure that the ingredients on the ingredient list are considered to be digestible ingredients. And so by that, I mean, you know, let's look for a ingredient list that lists recognizable ingredients. So chicken or beef or good quality grains. Let's recognize what they are on the list. That's a good starting point.
So if you turn around and look at the ingredients, then you should recognize what most of those things are. And presumably it's true that it's the largest, much like with human food, whatever the bulk of is in the food comes first. So it's in order of kind of percentage of what's in the pack, as it were.
Yeah. So in pet food, it's actually listed in terms of descending weight order. So the first listed ingredient is the one that should be most prolific in the food. But, and there is a but to include here, you need to consider that a lot of food is dry food when we talk about the pet food industry. And so what you need to do is remove the water from that ingredients list to work out what the most prolific ingredient is. So for example, if you've got a dry food and it's got chicken as the first listed ingredient, that's the volume of chicken or the weight of chicken in its wet form that's gone in. So you, what you want to do is remove the water from that. And generally speaking, if it's the first listed ingredient, it's so high up that list and so far in advance of other ingredients that it will still remain the first listed ingredient. But I think it's kind of a side topic, but it's something to be aware of, is when we start talking about pet food, if we're looking at dry food, you cannot directly compare dry food and a wet food just by looking at the label alone. So on every pet food label, there are requirements by law. And no matter where you get your pet food from, one of those requirements is that it has to have what's called a guaranteed analysis, or what's considered a panel of analytical constituents, which is a bit more complex. But basically, all this means is that it's a legal requirement to guarantee the maximum or minimum level of nutrients, key macronutrients in that pet food. And generally that we're talking about protein, fat, fiber, moisture, and what's called ash. I'm not going to get into all the details. Suffice to say that ash isn't cigarette ash. It's actually just mineral deposits that are in the food. But what's important here is that the guaranteed analysis is calculated on what's called an as-fed or as-is basis. This is the reason why you can't directly compare dry and a wet food on the label alone, because this analysis includes water. And obviously, when you have a dry food and a wet food, you've got a huge variation in the level of water content in both. So to make it really simple, look, let me give you an example. Let's say that on a dry food, we have a guarantee of 27% crude protein and a 10% moisture. And then you pick up a can of dog food and it says 10% protein. Well, if you just look directly at the two labels on this guaranteed analysis panel, you would say, oh, well, obviously the dry food has much more protein. That's going to be better for my dog. I'll take that one. Well, no, hold on. Take a step back. What you need to do is take the water out of the wet food, because dry food has approximately 8 to 10% of moisture in it, but wet food can have anywhere from 60 to 90% of water in it. So if you have a can of dog food that says it's got 10% of protein in it, well, that's 10% of the remaining, let's say, 75% water in the can that you've picked up. So to actually work out the protein content, you've got, you have to divide the amount of protein over what's left in terms of nutrient volume in the can and multiply it by 100. So in this case, a dry matter of 10% in a canned food that contains 75% water, the calculation is 10 over 25 multiplied by 100. So you actually have 40% protein in that can, which is more than what's on the dry food. So it's a simple kind of example. It's kind of complex to talk about it. It's easier to show diagrams and write. But basically, the message here is to be aware. When you pick up two bags of different types of food, you've always got to bear in mind that they both contain water, and you have to subtract the water content from the total to be able to work out the actual percentages of nutrients. Hope that makes sense.
Okay. Gosh, it is a little bit complicated, isn't it? But basically, you're saying just kind of be aware. Maybe we can talk a little bit more about wet foods in a little while, but just to go back to dry food, when you're looking on the back of the pack, and you should be recognizing the things that are in there. So that's fine. You pick up a pack and it's got some, you know, chicken and some grains and some rice and some carrots and some whatever in there. And then you go, okay, that's great. And then it's for an adult dog. That's it. Bingo. Give it a go.
Ish. Ish.
And it's the ish that I'm interested in.
Okay, look, let me recap for you. I know it gets really complex. Let's just break down a pet food label into the simplest terms, okay? The first thing is it complete and balanced? Is it complementary? The second thing is look at the ingredients list. The ingredients are listed in descending weight order. So kind of a good rule of thumb is to look for what we consider quality protein source to be the first listed ingredient. So ideally a meat or egg or something like that. And then once you've ticked that box, then the next thing to do is look at the analytical constituents panel. And that's where you've got your percentage of crude protein and your percentage of other nutrients. And the fundamental rule there is to remember that these percentages are on what's considered to be an as-fed basis. So you cannot directly compare a dry food label with a wet food label, because what you have to do is remove the water content first, and then you can more accurately compare the levels of nutrients within them.
Okay. So there comes an issue with wet food then. So, you know, why might you have, you know, pouches or tins of wet food in with a dry kibble for your pets?
The thing is, we need variety. Our pets need variety. And so cats in particular are very, very driven by mouthfeel, palatability. So not just the texture of food, but how it feels in their mouth. And so it's important to have variation of format available. So some cats will only eat wet food, some cats will only eat dry food, and this becomes an issue if further down the line they develop a health condition. And so we haven't even talked upon diet specifically for to nutritionally manage health conditions, but there are some, and a good example of that is kidney disease in cats. And so if a cat has unfortunately develops renal failure or a kidney problem, then they will need to go on a very, very specifically formulated diet that will be recommended by your vet. And it's important that they eat this particular diet, because as your kidney fails, and this happens in people as well, it loses the ability to kind of metabolize protein properly and to kind of extract the nitrogen from the system and excrete it from the body. And so that can cause problems. And so what you really want to do is feed a low protein food to any pet in with kidney issues. So if your cat is accustomed and determined to only eat one type of food, then there has to be variety available to provide them with the ability to nutritionally manage their condition in different formats. But also, to be honest, some cats and dogs get bored. So it's nice to be able to offer them different textures and different methods of manufacture so that it gives them a different palatability experience. And so there's a huge amount of manufacturing methods available now, much more than there were even a couple of years ago. So there's everything from your classic kibble, your extruded dry food, to your canned or wet food, to your pouches. And a lot of reasons why pouches and small cans are popular is because they allow single serve portions to be given. And so, you know, instead of having olden days, in inverted commas, a huge big can of pet food that you might last for a few days and just scoop bits out every mealtime for your pet, well, now you have much smaller cans that allow for a very fresh, flavoursome and tempting meal at each mealtime. So I think canned and pouches have a very strong place at the moment, and cats and dogs love them. But on top of that, you've now got freeze-dried foods, you've got dehydrated foods, you've got raw foods, you've got frozen foods, and of course, there's still homemade foods. So there's a lot of different options available. And I think, just like us people, it's important to have different formats to mix it up for our pets, as well as to have them available when they really need them, when they're not well.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
So you would recommend like a variety, because I think for a lot of people, they go, brilliant, my dog likes X brand, and that's it. They just feed them that, you know, for the rest of their lives almost. But you would say it is worth kind of trying other brands and just helping them have a little bit of variety in terms of what they're being fed over the years.
Look, I think my own dog's a classic example. She gets bored. In fact, my pets are kind of the reverse of normality. My dog is like a giant cat, and she's the fussiest eater I've ever come across, and she really will turn up her nose and walk away. My cat, on the other hand, he's like a wolf, and he'll eat anything you put in front of him, and he'll devour it. He loses all neck muscles and just face plants into the food until it's gone. And if my dog doesn't eat it, he'll go across and chow down on hers like it's, you know, massive gobstoppers, but he still doesn't stop him. So yeah, I think there's always room to mix it up for our pets and offer them variety. But, and there is a but here as well, just be careful. Some pets are used to having different variety of foods and different brands and different types. Others are, you know, particularly if they've been fed one type for a very long time, they could have quite a sensitive digestive system if you then try and switch them suddenly to a different food. So what we always recommend in the veterinary field is to do it gradually and slowly. And this is to allow their gut to adapt to the new food, because with any new food or any dietary change, it can cause a tummy upset. We hope it doesn't, but sometimes it can, especially if your pet's used to only one specific type of food and has been for weeks, months, or even years. And so generally the rule of thumb is to say, today we're feeding them 100% of their old food. Tomorrow I'm going to start introducing the new. So I'm going to bring in 10% of that to 90 of the old. Then you go 80-20 and all the way through until you've weaned them straight across onto the new food. And we say 7 to 10 days, generally speaking, to do that.
Just before we move on to specialist diets, Sarah, just one last point on the actual feeding process. How important is it to make sure that you're weighing out your food or feeding them the recommended amount, particularly when it comes to a pet who, like your cat, who will literally just eat everything and then some more?
It's vital. It's vital to weigh. Everybody should have weighing scales. Everyone. You know, it's really interesting. I did a study a number of years ago now. Where we were helping pet owners to help their pets to lose weight. And so, you know, I actually went into their homes, because some of them, I couldn't understand why they weren't losing weight. I'd formulated the amount, I'd given them the food, and yet they would come in and go, nope, not losing weight. And I was like, I don't understand. I've done the maths, I've done the science, this isn't making sense. And so I actually went in and visited them in their homes. And what was really eye-opening for me, I went into this owner's home and I said, okay, so show me how much you're giving Tibbles every day. And she goes, oh, here we go. And she tipped it out into the bowl. And I went, okay, great. Now let's weigh that, shall we? And we got the weighing scales and we weighed it. And I said, okay, now let's look at what the feeding guideline says on the pack. And lo and behold, she was feeding four times the recommended daily amount. So she was doing it by eye. But, you know, that's an extreme example. That certainly explains why they weren't losing weight. So I felt a little bit better. But the danger, and the real danger specifically with dry food, is because the kibble is so energy dense and so tasty and so packed full of nutrients, it becomes really, really important to weigh it. So every commercially prepared pet food will have feeding guidelines on the back of the pack. Use these guidelines, but remember that they're only guidelines. And so there's a range, generally speaking, there's a range. So if your cat weighs 5 kilos and the back of the pack says to feed 60 to 70 grams of X per day, and you're trying to get that cat to lose weight, I would always err on the lower end of that range. And if it's not, you know, if your cat's still putting weight on, for example, and you're concerned, talk to your vet, talk to your vet nurse, because we can help. We can really help. We might need to change the food that they're on. We might need to recommend a different food. Or there's other things we can do as well, like, you know, something really simple. I used to do a lot of work with a very good friend of mine, Peter Neville, an animal behaviorist. And his favorite thing, and for a very good reason, was to do away with food bowls. Get rid of the bowl. Because, you know, our pets don't need to do any work. So he had a really good point in terms of making our pets forage and work for their food. And so, you know, planting kibble is great for doing this. I don't recommend using wet food for this, especially on a hot day. It can get very smelly. But you know, scattering your dry kibble around the place to make your pets work for their meal can be really helpful. And, you know, exercising is good too. So even people think cats don't exercise. There's loads of different ways to get your cats to exercise and get them working for their food. And, you know, we can train them as well and reward them with treats. So that's a whole different topic. I'm getting off track, but you hear what I'm saying.
Yeah, and also when you're saying that, that sort of makes me think that, you know, you have to take into consideration, like, that's great, you feed them their portion of food at, twice a day or whenever, however often you feed your pet. But then if you're giving them a nice big treat in the middle of the day, which is kind of adding to that, you obviously have to take that into consideration as part of their overall daily amount.
Absolutely. And I think that's a really, really valid point, Julie, because again, another eye-opening learning for me is what people consider to be a normal treat for their pet actually can be their entire daily calorie allowance. So, you know, another example of this is lots of people will maybe share a little bit of toast with their dog when they're having breakfast in the morning. Please don't do this. Or if they're having, you know, lunch or afternoon snack, they might, you know, share a little bit of that. Don't do it. Because, you know, cheese is another massive culprit. If you think about it in terms of our body size and our pet's body size, what's tiny for us makes up a massive portion of a daily calorie allowance for a pet. And so generally, again, a rule of thumb here is a treat shouldn't exceed more than 10% of a daily energy requirements for any pet. And so really, they should be kept to a minimum. And feeding human foods to pets rapidly escalates well past their daily recommended calorie limit.
Hard when you've got those big eyes looking up at you there, isn't it?
No, it's not. No, it's not. It doesn't have to be a food treat. Playing, cuddles, they all work well.
So let's maybe move on to some of those lifestyles that you mentioned earlier on and some of the times that actually it can be beneficial to help our pets with a specific diet that's if they're going through something taking place in their life that they might need some assistance with.
Okay, well, I think some of the obvious ones are, we've touched on them already, weight loss diets. So these are often marketed as light diets. So they're not weight loss per se. And in fact, to be honest, you really need to speak with your vet before you start a weight loss diet with your pet, because it's very dangerous to just reduce the quantity of the food that you're feeding, because the risk there is if you have an adult maintenance diet of whatever lifestyle and the feeding guideline says feed between X and Y and you decide to feed way less than that range, there's a real danger that you're going to nutritionally imbalance your pet and they'll end up with a nutrient deficiency. So don't ever do a weight loss diet without talking to your vet, because that does have to be carefully monitored to make sure that they have the right nutrients in the right proportion. But other types of lifestyle diets are diets specifically for neutered pets. And these are really important, because we do know now that when we neuter our dogs or our cats, that their metabolism does slow down. And so they're not able to burn up the same energy as they would have been prior to being neutered. So again, specific diets have been formulated to allow for this change in metabolism. And so that's why they're marketed as such. Other ones might be sensitive diets. And these would be specifically formulated for pets that might have a sensitive digestion. Again, we touched on it just a moment ago, but good examples of this would be that they might contain some prebiotics. So that's kind of food for the good bacteria in the gut. And examples of that are like chicory and inulin and nice sources of fiber. But they might also have specific fatty acids that will help decrease inflammation, for example, in the gastrointestinal tract. Other ones might be activity or working or performance diets. So that would be, example of that would be police dogs or military dogs or guide dogs, dogs that are working really hard and burning up way more calories than those that tend to be sitting at home with their owners and going for one or two walks a day. And these diets would be, again, specifically formulated with higher levels of energy, but more specifically targeted at maybe extra levels of protein and specific levels of very targeted fats and other nutrients like antioxidants to help minimize oxidative damage on working joints. So that's just an example of some lifestyle diets. But I think one area that we haven't touched on that I do want to talk about are senior pets. And that's an area that is emerging that we are learning a lot more about now as well, because our pets are living for longer. So just like us, our pets are living longer too. We want them to live longer and healthier lives. So there was a myth a long time ago that diets high in protein were bad for senior pets. This isn't true. the only time that a diet high in protein is bad for our pets is if they have specifically got a kidney problem. Most healthy pets don't. So high quality digestible protein is really important for aging pets because they tend, just like us, they tend to lose muscle mass as they age. And so the protein will help to maintain that. But generally speaking, you know, our senior pets, their metabolism will change. So even if we don't see any changes on the outside, changes will start to happen on the inside. So it's, again, it's important to consider switching your pet to a senior diet as they age. And this is to account for things that we can't see, like a slowing metabolism, changes in activity, changes in body condition, changes in their immune function. It'll get a little less efficient as they age. So will their digestive system. So they mightn't be able to digest and absorb the nutrients as well as they were when they were younger. So again, high quality nutrients are important. They'll have some changes in their sensory functions. Again, changes in their oral health, so their teeth. And so in sort of general terms, dogs are considered to be senior at about 7 years of age, but again, it is size dependent. and cats the same, although cats are living longer. And so it's not unheard of. Well, we did a podcast on this not so long ago, but it's not unheard of for cats now to be living up to the age of 20 and even beyond. And so to consider a cat senior at seven is probably pushing it. And I think that's starting to change. I personally would consider a cat to be middle-aged at around seven to 12, and then senior from maybe 12 on. And then, as we learned the term from Sarah Caney, super senior from 15.
And would you say with all these specialist diets, presumably, much like we say often, you know, speak to your vet about making sure that they're on the right kind of diet for their life stage and lifestyle?
Always. And I think even before you talk to your vet, talk to the pet food company, call them up. All commercial pet food companies have a phone line or an address. Again, it's a legal requirement. You have to be able to get in touch with them. So call them, speak with them and ask them, you know, what they would recommend for your individual pet. And if you want more information or your pet has a specific health condition that you're worried about, just go ahead and talk to your own vet or vet nurse. In fact, vet nurses are super well educated when it comes to pet food nutrition and often much more so than us vets.
You talk about fussy pets a little bit earlier on with Rumba. You go to all this trouble of choosing what you think is going to be a really nice food for your dog or your cat. They turn their nose up at it. I mean, how long should you keep trying and how much should you hold out before you just go, fine, here, have whatever it is I know you are going to eat?
This is so hard and so individual. I mean, as you said earlier, they just give you that look. I mean, it breaks your heart and you just want to go, okay, I'll give you something else. To be serious, in cats, don't wait. Don't wait, because cats have a very real risk of entering anorexia, and anorexia, it has a different meaning in the pet world. So if you don't feed your cat for up to 24 hours, it's quite serious. Cats are anatomically and physiologically developed to graze, and so they need to eat frequently, little meals frequently. And so don't ever hold out on your cat. If your cat's not eating, find something to get your cat to eat, because if they stop eating and they kind of self-starve, it can lead to liver problems and it can become a bit of a veterinary emergency. So that's probably why we have a term for fussy cats, because they've learned this about us. And so we truly are their slaves. But there is a very real health risk behind not feeding your cat. So your dog is a little bit of a different matter depending on the dog. They tend to be a bit more robust, and so they can go without food for longer than cats. They don't suffer the same metabolic consequences. But to be honest, I wouldn't wait more than 24 to 36 hours without feeding a pet. You know, they're not designed for it. And so that said, my dog can be really stubborn, and I have held out 36 hours on her and then just given in, and I have fed her an alternative food and she's gone, great, that's all I wanted. So she has me well trained. But yeah, you can be a little bit more hardline with your dogs, but don't be with your cats.
And actually, cats, obviously, they should little and often. With dogs, does it matter how often you feed them? Because my own dog, I used to try feeding her twice a day and she only was interested in eating once a day, really.
Yeah, we do recommend twice a day. It does depend on your dog, and some dogs may not want to eat more than once a day. But generally speaking, research has indicated that we ideally should be feeding them twice a day, because you know, a bit like us. You know, they have a fast overnight. We break the fast in the morning, and then we feed them again in the evening. So it, normally speaking, I'd recommend two meals a day. There are cases where you might want to feed more frequently if, for example, you've got huskies and you're running sled races in Alaska. But some dogs might not want to eat more than once a day, and that happens as well. So I think, you know, listen to your own pet. You know your pet better than anyone else. And so if you're feeding them once a day, but they seem hungry and they're looking for food, then, you know, definitely consider feeding them twice a day. On the other hand, if you're feeding them twice a day and they're leaving most of their food in the morning or the evening, then maybe they don't need two meals a day. But on that note, puppies need to be fed much more frequently, and so do kittens, than adult dogs. So normally we would feed three times a day in puppies and kittens. Well, four times a day when you're weaning them, then you reduce them to three, then back down to two.
Cool. And also actually just saying what you, about sort of smaller foods, I guess another time is when your pet's poorly as well. I guess that's another time to sort of look at their diet a little bit, isn't it? Or if they've had surgery.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. When pets are ill, they probably don't, just like us, they don't feel like eating. But again, there are some very specifically formulated foods on the market that are really, really high in palatability, super dense in the right nutrients, and also very easy to take. And so your vet will recommend a food like that if your pet's not well.
Okay, so one of the things that seems to have been quite popular, a sort of rise in raw diet feeding or natural feeding. I mean, what does that really mean, and is it a good thing or not?
I actually think we should do a podcast on this because it's so controversial. But I think, you know, for my tuppence worth, is I'm wary of it. I'm wary because I've seen issues. You know, I've personally had to refer a dog for surgery that had been fed raw bones, and they'd lodged right in the thorax, in the chest area at the entrance to the stomach. So it required a specialist referral because you had to open the chest to do the surgery to remove the bone. So it was a life-threatening condition. The dog couldn't swallow and was having difficulty breathing. And so this was because a bone was fed that just cracked and lodged right at the entrance of the stomach. So I don't recommend feeding bones, cooked or raw. I also worry about raw food diets because of the high levels of bacteria that they contain. And this is where the controversy comes in, because obviously raw meat has salmonella. So it's a risk, not just to your pet, but also to you as a person preparing it. If you're not appropriately hygienic and cleaning the surfaces and wiping down everything you use. The controversy comes in because obviously every animal, just like we're animals and our pets are animals, we all have different types of bacteria throughout our gastrointestinal tract. And so actually it's quite normal for dogs to have bacteria such as E. coli and Salmonella. And so this is where the controversy comes in, because how much is too much? And so I think it might be an individual situation whereby you feed a raw food diet that's high in Salmonella and it actually tips over in that pet's own gastrointestinal system and immune system into ill health and GI disease. Or your pet's able to tolerate it because they've built up an immunity to that particular strain or type of bacteria that's also in the food that you're feeding. So I think it's a really interesting topic. I think the jury's out. There's a lot of information still to be kind of sifted through, and I'd like to see some hard science, not just anecdotal. Well, that's all for this episode of the Pet Pod. I really hope it's helped you to understand a little bit more about what to look for when you're examining the labels on your packets of pet food. But don't forget that nobody knows your pet like you do. So if you're in any way worried or concerned at all about their health or any element of their diet, please make sure to contact your own local veterinary practice. My thanks again to our sponsors, YouMove, and don't forget to check out their website for a chance to win a year's supply of supplements for your dog, your cat, or even your horse. And to make sure you receive the next episode, please do like and subscribe. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.